modern science certainly treats a human being as a machine. It's a machine made up of molecules that interact under the laws of chemistry and physics. If we are machines, then our consciousness, our mind, our love for each other emerges from those mechanical properties. So it seems to me that in principle, a device could be built out of other material with similar emergent properties. People feel very uncomfortable about that.
This is Adam Chartoff, and you're listening to FilmWax Radio, the independent film talk show. Every week, we're visited by filmmakers, actors, journalists, programmers, and others to sit down and chat about the state of independent film. On today's show, upon fathering triplets, filmmaker Avi Zev Weider explores the nature of technology seeking what it means to be human. Avi's film, Welcome to the Machine, will have its theatrical engagement at Rerun Theater starting Friday, January 11th for the week. Welcome to FilmWax Radio, Avi Zev Weider. I remember the Kickstarter event?
Yep, absolutely.
It was all the New York filmmakers that had Kickstarter campaigns and for films that were in that season, South by Southwest.
Yeah, that's right. It was a really good group.
And you all had to give like a presentation.
Yeah, and I think I had been, we were in the final mix and I was just hallucinatingly underslept and overtired.
Yeah, because it was like days before South.
Right? It was just down to the wire. I think we were just day two of the mix and it was, a marathon session.
Well, the film is called Welcome to the Machine. We'll get into it in a moment, and let's talk about our history though a little bit, because it's like the elephant in the room, or the white elephant in the room. Is that the expression? I was your domestic for about a month.
Briefly,
I had been. This is before FilmWax began, and after I was trying to get out of the corporate world. So a friend of mine came in and said, "I have this great idea for a company. We'll start." I required a lot of talking into. Like I thought this was probably at best a shaky model.
Green cleaning.
And so you guys were like my first client, basically. And she disappeared, my partner. Like, she just went away. Didn't disappear. She said, I'm going taking the kids. We're going to go out of town for the summer. I'll be back in, at the end of August.
And she never came back?
No, she did. She did. No, she did. And then she came back and she was like, I don't want to do this. But, the thing is, I didn't either, but at the same time, and it was, the hottest summer.
Really it was brutally hot.
And the funny thing is that I felt immediately, because you just had these triplets, and we're going to get into this. This is what the beauty of this whole bizarre relationship. But the moment I met the babies, I just felt this desire to sort of, as a dad and as a compassionate person, to just help and be like, I felt like really good about being part of the team, because you really required a team. You had therapists in and housekeeper.
Someone living with us to care of the babies. Basically, the kids were born in May, and then in, I would say, November, we moved to a house in Pittsburgh, which was a bit outside of the city in a place called Fox Chapel.
Oh, so I was thinking maybe you moved into a Falling Water house. That would have been a good deal. Yeah, it was available for a few months.
Well, it was a great old farmhouse with a huge barn, a great piece of land. It would be a great place to live now with the kids, but with infants, with premature infants, we could have lived on the moon. It didn't matter. We weren't going anywhere.
Hold up, and we weren't going anywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. And the whole purpose was basically to get out of circulation, because we were really trying to keep the kids as healthy as possible, not to get sick, basically, because
they were preemies.
Because they were preemies, high, kind of a high risk situation where you don't really want them to get and a lot of colds because they need to grow as much as possible. And when kids get sick, they stop growing. I mean, of course, when they get better, they start growing again. But the preemies is pretty important. And there's something called RSV, which is a type of, basically a type of cold virus. It's a respiratory virus that preemies are very susceptible to, and they could end up in the hospital. So the idea was, let's get out of the city and out of circulation, basically. My my wife's parents live in Pittsburgh, so there was an opportunity to get to this house. And the whole plan backfired in the end because the kids ended up getting very sick, brought in by, you know, a babysitter that, that hired. So
I think I met you right after that. And you had just come back.
I think we'd come back, yeah.
Yeah,
so basically we were there for the winter, which turned out to be like a record snowfall winter there. I mean, it was it was like epic. And then we got back in the spring, and I think that's when we met, yeah.
But somewhere in the during that time period was the seed of the there's a story here that that you were inspired by,
right?
And which launched the film Welcome to the Machine.
Well, it launched it launched the film as we know it now, but actually and with the magic of movie making and editing, it appears that way. But in fact, I had already shot the film, except for the part with the kids.
I see.
I had been working on a film
It makes more sense because I'm like, when did you
Well, how did I have time to do all this incredible work? So actually, the way it came together is I had been working on a film on and off for years, totally just out of pocket, interviewing a lot of these experts that are in the film, futurists, scientists, roboticists, social scientists, anti-technology advocates, and even the U.S. Army with the pilots training to fly drone aircraft, and Dean Lloyd, who was a guy who received an artificial retina, basically a microchip directly connected to his optic nerve. And I had all these stories together, and then we got pregnant with triplets, had the kids, and of course everything got put on hold for a while. But while we were, say, like, you know, holed up during that winter,
yes,
I had already developed kind of the tone of the film and the kind of the pacing that I was interested in. But while I couldn't do any work on it because the triplets required so much hands-on care by my wife, myself, and a full-time additional person living with us, a baby nurse who specialized in multiples, of course, I couldn't really get much done. But I did start to realize that what I was living through now with the kids was really kind of all tied up with issues of technology also, their conception, their birth. And their survival now was very dependent on technology. And then also kind of thinking philosophically or theologically about technology and how we see each other as machines and this, you know, the duality of our existence as both machines and not machines or a mind-body split. It was very kind of apparent to me when you have kids and you're so involved in the mechanics of living. Sometimes I was able to kind of step back and see how that fit into the picture of the movie I had been making. So when I then I got back to editing for real, it just kind of became a natural that I would include that in the film and include my experience. And it also helped because the movie, I think, would have been a lot more boring without me in it.
Oh, well, I was going to say it kind of humanizes.
And humanizes, exactly.
After 2 months in the NICU, two of the babies, Zach and Maxine, come home with us. Cuba, however, has to remain. One of us, as well as other family members, visit every day so he isn't alone. But to manage all the emotional and physical logistics of having three babies in two different places, I require both. When I'm away, I tell myself that he's programmed to survive. But it's hard not to think of him alone in there at night. A little machine living inside a machine.
And that was kind of the whole point of, you know, my thesis for the film, if I can use the word thesis, was that when you talk about technology, you end up talking about yourself. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing kind of folded back on itself for me.
where does technology fit in your life? As far as does it embellish in a positive way? Do you think it kind of, what kind of role does it play in your life in particular?
It's pretty integral. I mean, I think, you know, technology is a part of being human. Now, in terms of the functional aspects of day-to-day use of technology, I use it all the time. Especially because I work generally from home, so, and the kids are still young and they're still home, a lot of the time.
How old are they?
They're 3.5. So technology is something that I rely on constantly. It does allow me to work kind of from anywhere, which is helpful. But you have to watch it, because it's not a great idea to be spending time with your kids and you're just looking at your phone, because then you're basically putting the other person or people or kids on pause, and they're competing with your attention. And it's especially difficult for us, because with multiples, they're already competing for our attention, and they're already not getting the one-on-one really intense affection and love and attention that a parent would give to a single child.
Which would
at
be
a
more
time.
Right, which is sort of part of that, at least early on, the very beginning of life, the normal common experience for it, right?
Exactly. So right. They don't, they didn't get that, and we didn't get that. I mean, we get other things that parents and children who are just one-on-one don't get. There's a whole sort of group dynamic that's very, mm-hmm. can be very fun and interesting and bonding and loving. So when personal technology becomes something that takes your attention away from the real, boring parts of interpersonal relationships, which are key to those relationships, mm-hmm. then I think you should try to make yourself aware of it. And it's really difficult, because I find myself increasingly more attached and attracted to my connection to what I would say the network, which is, basically comes through my iPhone constantly.
We are just in this little tiny island surrounded by deep mystery, and we're just like tentatively sticking a toe in the sea of mystery over here and seeing if we can put down another pier, and it might last for a while or it might be knocked down. And there's the sort of humility of trying to understand reality and recognizing that we don't.
It's like there's this little engine of novelty that started to go haywire, generating solutions, but also new conditions and new situations, and just the speed and the ferociousness of this transformation is itself becoming increasingly a factor in people's lives.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. There's technology that does things for us, and there's always been the aspect of technology that does things to us.
I have a cousin who's sick. She's uh-huh. been dealing with an illness, mm-hmm. but she's back now with her in her parents' house, basically, trying to deal with her illness. But her lifeline, and this is very new. She's a Luddite by nature, but she has this lifeline that kind of connects her to the world. And she's so bedridden, she loves it. It's open the door. So in some ways, I've been thinking about this for a while now. How when I walk down the street and I see so many people walking, and just now, like this, with their phone. And we all do it to some degree. Like, you can't walk down the street without checking your email and texting really?
Yeah.
And but it's just to such an extent that it begs even a larger observation about what's going on.
Right.
And really, I'm thinking, in my paranoid way, we're closer to this point where if all technology were just to decide to turn off, and of course I'm speaking highly hypothetically, but if it just all went dead, we're completely at its mercy, in other words. So what would we do? I don't think we're really that far. It's very kind of David Cronenberg meets,
right,
Stanley Kubrick,
sure,
whomever. But I really, if you look back at some of the futurists from not that long back, they were very prescient.
Yeah, well absolutely. The only thing I would say is that technology, while it's an accelerating phenomena, and the power of technology grows at an exponential rate, we are not you know, standing still either. So, so it's not as if, you know, one day the robots will be marching on your door. I think it's more like we are becoming more integrated with the technology, or the technology has become more integrated with us. So, so it becoming this, you know, malevolent, you know, force, that's great narrative material.
Well, I don't even look at it as particularly malevolent, but finish your thought.
Oh, well, yeah, but, well, by saying like, oh, well, then Skynet becomes alive and, you know, then yeah. It's Terminator. You know, which, you know, I suppose that might happen. But I think it's more like it's just becoming more a part of what it means to be human. So that's, you know, that's both thing. It's both good and it's both bad. It's not just that we're becoming slaves to our email and our phones, but it's also that we can reprogram gene sequences and cure horrible diseases that have afflicted us, you know, forever. So both of these things happen at the same time. And just as we develop ways to combat disease and virus through inoculation, it's the same thing. There's the same trends happen in technology.
We're speaking with Avi Zev-Weider. The film is called Welcome to the Machine. It's a new documentary. It's going to be at Rerun Theater starting Friday, January 11th for the week. Check out reruntheater.com for details. I was going to say,
yes, I've been swamped by life.
Life swamped. I had the privilege to meet your three children. I haven't seen them in a while. They were awfully, awfully adorable. I can only imagine.
Awfully adorable.
Awfully. adorably awful at times. Let's talk a little bit about the years leading up to where you find yourself now with the film and with your family. But before that, you were an emerging filmmaker. You had a short called I Remember.
Yes.
Which you... I guess got some good. Was it at Sundance?
Or it was at Sundance in 1998,
just a few years ago.
Just a few.
So what happened?
A few short years ago.
You had a business.
So what happened was, I made this wonderful short film. It stars John Cameron Mitchell,
who would disappear from the planet, and whatever happened to that poor guy.
Who knows? he had been in Hedwig at the Westbeth when I saw him, which is he's a wonderful actor, of course, and filmmaker, filmmaker and actor, I should say. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, is I made that film, and then the guy I made it with, we went into business together. He was an animator, and was getting lots of animation jobs, so I started producing those jobs, and these are basically cable promos for HBO, for Bravo, and this is before Bravo was the Bravo we know today.
It was I've said this before, Bravo started off sort of as an arts channel.
Yeah. It was
before
great.
They
didn't even show commercials Housewives. For a while. They would show, you know, like great old movies and stuff. But it was sort of evolving at that time, and they would do things like show the Godfather series, like all around. We did all these great promos for that, or they showed moonlighting, you know, and so the stuff we were doing was it was stop motion animation. We would get puppets made and mm-hmm. elaborate stuff. Shot it on 35mm frame at a time.
Sounds exciting.
Mixed media stuff, all kinds of kind of fun old school types of animation, the motion control cameras and everything. Mm-hmm. So we had this business and never made a lot of money doing it. And we ran it until 2004, about. And then my business partner left for California. We split it up. At that point, I decided, you know, I wanted to kind of get back to what I wanted to do, which was making my own films. I mean, it was this sort of classic model where we were like, oh, let's do these jobs and that'll fund us, you know, making more films. And we did help to produce a number of documentaries, Cinemania,
right,
30th Century Man, Stephen Kayak's great films, as well as some other stuff. We developed some narrative series stuff for IFC, mm-hmm. Stuff that didn't really go really anywhere. So I started to work on my own stuff again, write screenplay and working on Welcome to the Machine little by little. And that's basically it. You know, things kind of move at a glacial pace in a way with independent filmmaking, at least in my experience.
Sure. No, I think it's probably the more common experience. And you are from New York?
I grew up in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. In Park Slope, since I was about 4 or 5 years old.
Also, when we did connect a few years ago, I guess it was now, but that... I remember also Alexandra, your wife, filmmaker Alexandra Berger, who looked very familiar, and I couldn't place it. But it turned out that we had these mutual friends, because mm-hmm. even though I hadn't really started this whole thing, this mm-hmm. scam, but I had been writing, doing articles and stuff like that. So I think I had run into her a number of times. And speaking of Alexandra, she too has a new documentary. It won't be at the rerun at this next week, but it's called
Danland.
Danland, you're a producer on it, right?
Yep. It's coming out in the spring.
Okay, it's described as a pornumentary.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we followed an amateur porn producer named Dan Leal, when his goes by the name Porno Dan.
Catchy.
You can check him out online. And we followed him for 3 years, and the film is it's really a man in search of, and he's looking for love. He's looking for a committed relationship, despite his industry and his own
worst inclinations.
Exactly.
Or his dark passenger, or whatever.
So we've kind of followed him ups and downs.
As it were, exactly. The 3 years though, that's remarkable.
Yeah, 3 years. We went to Vegas with him numerous times. He was nominated for AVN Awards. He was really kind of breaking out in his realm.
I can only imagine the stories that Alexander would be bringing back home. And, I'm sure you were there some of the times, of course.
Yeah, but I shot most of them.
Oh, yeah? Okay. So you were there. You were shooting. Did you ever just have to take your eye away from behind the camera and make sure you were seeing what you were actually seeing? Because the guy lost.
Yeah.
You talk about how does a subject lose the self consciousness of being in front of a camera?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well,
this guy was in front of another camera,
in front
not
of a
being self conscious, let alone.
Well, he was a complicated character, and it was a complicated film to make. Not the easiest to keep going on, but Alex is an incredibly intuitive director and filmmaker. And so she knew what she wanted to get, and definitely pushed me to keep going.
Keep shooting, you ass.
Yeah, basically.
Don't fucking turn the camera away.
Yeah, yeah.
Despite your own best inclinations.
And, the film is really good. We premiered it at Slamdance last January, and it's going to be having a day and date release in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be theaters and online.
Great. You said in the spring.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll have her on.
Absolutely.
But your film, Welcome to the Machine, is coming right up. You're excited. Do you have ideas for Q&As or anything like that?
I think the first night, I'm just going to be firming that up in the next day or so, but my co-editor, Anne Husseini, music composer Michael Montez will be there one night.
That's right. He's doing Danland too, right?
He did Danland too.
He did, yeah. He's great. Actually, I don't mind saying he's now working on Michael Tully's film.
That's right.
But he's
and
also
he did Septien also.
He did Septien, mm-hmm. And maybe you don't know this, but he works around the corner. But he's also we're working on a new theme song for my show.
Oh, great! I'm going to actually see him.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, well, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. He's wonderful. He did the music. Music for I Remember. That's how I met him.
Oh, I didn't know that. I guess I turned it off as soon as the credits.
Yeah.
I know. I actually just watched it this on New Year's.
Yeah.
I had not seen it before, but I try to make it through. I try to see as much as I can before I talk to somebody, of course. But
it's only 17.
Yeah, no, well worth the time. It's funny. It's like almost like a poem.
Yeah.
You know.
Or, that's right.
Yeah. That way. For T.S. Eliot. So you'll be at the Verona.
So two other guest people who will be there. One night, I think the 14th, we're going to have Ben Rudin, who is a wonderful artist. He does a lot of stuff with data visualization and his artwork, his pieces on the Times buildings, award-winning. He has a short film called Terminal 8 that we're going to show beforehand terminal at JFK. It's a great environmental film, very much about the space and the technology of that terminal. And we'll be speaking afterwards. And then on the 16th, I guess it'll be Jake Barton of Local Projects, who is an incredible designer and thinker. His company, Local Projects, is one of the key interactive designers for the 9/11 Memorial Museum.
And is that right?
Does great, far-reaching thinking about how we use technology for the betterment of communities, as well as in educational environments, interactive environments, museum environments. And he was one of my best friends growing up.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, your film is ripe for bringing on people who have opinions about the subject.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just sort of ripe for that. You know, it's because it's not purely this personal driven like story.
Right.
Even something like a Chapatulis or something would be harder to bring in talking heads. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But neither is it. It's not an advocacy film either. Like a typical advocacy film would be, you know. I think it comes from a very different skew, if you will.
Would you say it's more poetic?
keeping it's almost like a haiku, cinematic haiku. Well, anyway, I do want to thank you for coming. We'll repeat the details for everybody. The name of the film is Welcome to the Machine. Don't confuse it with that obscure song,
yes,
from which the title is inspired. But it will be at Rerun in Dumbo, starting Friday, January 11th. I think there is a 7:30 and a 10:15 screenings. Right? You have a
there's usually there's two shows a day.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
Except for sometimes there isn't.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. So on Sundays and stuff, they have like events and stuff. But
correct.
But do check.
Yeah.
So by the time that this comes out, people can check Rerun's website and, of course, Welcome to the Machine's website. Mm-hmm. And we'll have all the details on times and maybe those who are guests, special guests, etc. Thank you, Avi, very much for coming by.
Thank you.
It's been long overdue, and I'm glad we finally are able to cross this off our mutual bucket list.
Absolutely.
And give my regards to Alex and the little ones.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye.